Available on our website at kbu.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kbu.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. There's been some talk that the U.S. may end up banning TikTok. The Associated Press reports that former Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin is working on putting together an investment group to buy the short-form video hosting service. Some commentators have said that the targeting of TikTok is actually about Israel. KBOO contributor David Rosenberg spoke with content creator James Rewald, who has more than 400,000 followers on TikTok.
You've looked into the TikTok situation, and you think there's something not being revealed there in the mainstream media, it sounds like, that they're talking about a ban or they're talking about cracking down, but you say it has something to do with Israel and Gaza. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, I guess the calls for banning TikTok obviously date back. There was that short stint during the Trump administration, but it's always been like a thorn on the U.S.'s side. But I think that's been, you know, brought back into the fold, especially post October 7th, as the U.S. and Israel try to do damage control on this PR crisis as the Israeli genocide of Palestinians unfolds. And, you know, it's funny because it's like they've been very open about it. Israeli Zionist organizations, lobbying groups like AIPAC, even the CEO of the ADL, which is very openly Zionist organization, have been very vocal. There was a leaked recording from the CEO of the ADL who's, you know, he didn't mince his words. He understood that they have a generational problem. They said that they have a Gen Z problem. They have a TikTok problem.
Is it only TikTok they're concerned about, or is it other social media outlets?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, they are concerned about, you know, everything. The, you know, social media as a whole has really helped streamline, you know, just disseminating information about what's happening on the ground. And that includes TikTok. But it's really interesting because they give a lot of attention to TikTok. And I think it's, you know...
Is that an easy target because it's Chinese? Is that the
answer? Exactly. It's a low-hanging fruit. It's already been under the target of U.S. foreign policy to say, hey, this is a Chinese-owned company. It's kind of combined this whole, like, anti-China hysteria and, you know, anti-Palestinian propaganda to say, hey, let's do two birds, one stone. And of course, you know, U.S. senators or Congress, they've been very open about it too. I think there was like a Republican House rep or senator who was like, yeah, this has become like the one of the primary news outlets for people under the age of 30. They understand that they're losing a little bit of control over the narrative, so they need to sort of gear it back towards something that they feel they can control, which is interesting because it's more a reflection of just younger generations' political inclinations rather than like TikTok like morphing their minds, right? It's this kind of like mistaking the political views espoused by younger people, saying, oh, they're being manipulated, rather than like, no, they've arrived at this, they're a bit disillusioned with their own government, you know, living conditions are terrible,
right.
We're at
whenever they
wars.
Use that strike out on their own in dissent, it's always outside agitators
or... outside, exactly. There's no way young people could arrive at this by themselves. It must be Russian trolls and Chinese agents. It's like always some other thing. So it's really interesting because they think that banning TikTok is going to be the silver bullet. But like people will still talk about, they'll move to other platforms, and sure, like censorship is still widespread, whether it's on Meta or Google or Twitter or X. So, you know, there's still always going to be those, you know, roadblocks, but, you know, banning TikTok isn't going to be able to silence people, but it is an attempt to.
So how do you see this thing playing out? I mean, will there be a bill in Congress that will actually do something about TikTok, or will it just kind of die?
Yeah, I've been curious myself. I mean, I don't know, to be honest. I mean, if it does get banned, I suspect people just, you know, flock to Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts. Although, like, there's something nice with the algorithm on TikTok that's kind of a invaluable thing. Which is also part of this too, is that, you know, it's, you know, U.S. imperialism at work protecting the interests of these monopoly capitalists, all these U.S. based social media companies. So it's kind of like you get to do multiple things in one by potentially banning TikTok. But yeah, I mean, I'm not entirely sure. It could go. I mean, Biden has said he'll sign it if it gets passed, makes its way to his desk.
But so, wouldn't it be tied up in the courts on free speech issues? Wouldn't there be a big entanglement there? And
yeah,
the whole thing would take a long time to play out.
I think so too. It feels like it could be kind of a charade, like during election year, like let's get talking about this. Yeah, I mean, I'm leaning towards maybe nothing will happen just because we've been through this before. And like also like it's just amazing because like the re-election campaign for Biden, I mean, his advisors got to understand, like they're already dealing with the bad PR that comes with facilitating a genocide. It's taken over 30,000 lives, Palestinian lives.
They're trying to kind of deal with it in their own way by emphasizing humanitarian aid and,
right,
you know, talking about their differences with Netanyahu. But
right,
you know, the failure to take action is what gets people riled, I think.
Yeah, it's I mean, he's doing that too, which is funny because people are exposing on TikTok like, oh, they're sending like breadcrumb aid packages while shipping weapons like every 36 hours. So yeah, it's still not working. They still have a PR crisis on their hands. I don't think banning TikTok is going to help. So there could be a change of heart, but you know, we'll see. I feel like this might get strung up in the courts too.
Anybody in Congress speaking out against banning TikTok? Anybody come from that side?
Not really. I mean, there's like most of, last time I checked, most of Congress is down to ban it, and the people who are, you know, against it, they're not really outspoken. There's not really any debate here, right? It's just kind of another bipartisan moment where, you know, Congress, when it comes to improving people's material conditions in the U.S., it's just like back and forth. But when it comes to, you know, sending weapons to Israel or banning TikTok, they seem to just reach across the aisle and you know, say, okay, we can do this. So yeah, not a lot of pushback right now, from my understanding.
Do you think there are people who seriously believe that some pro-Israel group can buy TikTok?
Yeah, I've heard different things. I think just the fact that they're planning or hoping to sell it off to a U.S. buyer, like that's very well possible. I mean, literally both political factions of our U.S. ruling class, both the Democrats and the Republicans, they're all openly Zionist. They're all pro-Israel. So, yeah, I mean, if it gets acquired by a U.S. company, it's very possible. I remember, who was it? There was somebody, the name escapes me, that was talking about wanting to, someone related to Trump. I think it was like the secretary of, who was it? Somebody in the Trump circle.
Stephen Mnuchin.
Yeah, Stephen Mnuchin was, yeah, he's voicing like, let's buy it. Yeah, which would be crazy. We're going to have Elon Musk owning X and then have Mnuchin owning a TikTok. Yeah, that'd be crazy. So yeah, it's possible. I mean, that's the goal, right? They want to sell it to a U.S. buyer. And it's really interesting too, because up until this point, they've been like, you know, making moves to try and bring more control of TikTok onto the U.S.'s side. There's this like misconception that it's like, oh, China's just controlling the TikTok and trying to shape all the youth's minds. But it's like they've already made some concessions at the end of the Biden administration and the beginning of the Trump, or sorry, end of the Trump administration, beginning of the Biden administration, where they stored all the data centers under Oracle, you know, in the U.S. They said, okay, you guys have it here. And of course, Oracle is like, you know, like the safest place in terms of national security, the host data, the contract with, you know, the DOD and the CIA and whatnot. So they're very integrated with the national security state. So they're hosting at Oracle. And on top of that, they've, you know, TikTok's hired, you know, which sounds like conspiratorial, but it's literally just the same path that other social media companies have taken, where they, you know, hire people from the national security state and intelligence communities. They bring in these State Department guys. They bring in people from the FBI, putting them in these different positions, just to, you know, kind of take the heat off them and say like, okay, we're, you know, we're trying to be safe here and make sure we're doing what we need to do. So we're following what Google, Meta, Twitter have done. But even with that, it's not enough, apparently, right? So they want to go for the full thing and actually acquire it under some US-based ownership or some company. So yeah, it's hard to tell what will happen, but I'm kind of leaning towards like this might just get drawn out. But it does show some dangerous kind of intent that, you know, how far US imperialists are willing to go to really control the narrative and how much they really do fear, you know, people's change in sentiment. We're seeing like world breaking solidarity with Palestinians across the globe, including the US. You know, this is a huge crisis for Zionists. I think, you know, it does highlight the risk and the danger that comes with, you know, activism and organizing, that, you know, the ruling class is going to try and squabble and or try to figure out to recontrol the narrative. But, you know, acting like TikTok is like the silver bullet and people are going to stop is silly, because, you know, you can't silence that many people.
Anything else you want to add to what you said?
Yeah, just that, you know, regardless of what happens, I hope people still keep, you know, being loud and keep informing people. I think we're kind of at an awakening point for a lot of people where, you know, they flip on the news, they, you know, talk to their parents, they, you know, talk to whoever, and, you know, the all these news outlets, they don't really speak to the issue, and you really have to socially investigate and try to understand things yourself and work with organizations. So, you know, regardless of what happens, I hope people, you know, keep that spirit up and, you know, keep being an activist and organizing. And yeah, I mean, if TikTok gets banned, so what? You know, there's other platforms, but yeah.
That was James Rewald, a content creator who makes short-form political, leftist, and anti-imperialist content on TikTok and X. Rewald was just speaking with KABU contributor David Rosenberg. You are listening to KABU News in Depth. Turning now to electoral politics, some people believe that President Biden's domestic agenda, not including immigration, is relatively progressive and that he should be the clear choice for left-leaning voters in this year's presidential election. It looks like the presidential election will be a contest between Biden and former President Donald Trump, but critics of the two-party system don't necessarily see things that way. Laura Wells is with the Green Party of California. She spoke with KABU contributor David Rosenberg.
As you look at the presidential campaign as it's unfolding between Biden and Trump, what do you see there? What are your impressions?
I'm afraid I see what a lot of people see, which is nobody wanted these two people for the race in 2024 to be the same two people that were there in 2020 and who have done such disappointing things during each of their 4-year terms as president. Nobody wanted this. I mean, I can't say nobody.
Although some people, when they look at the Biden administration, they see that he's tried to pass a lot of what they would consider progressive or moderately progressive legislation on climate, you know, helping families and children. Some people credit him with the low unemployment numbers and the creation of jobs. I don't know if that's really fair. You know, presidents get credit and blame for the creation of jobs. I don't know how much they have to do with it. But at any rate, some people see him as relatively progressive compared to, say, the previous three Democratic presidents. What do you make of that?
I think that at this point, and I know people want to talk about Biden's domestic property, his domestic plans, and they don't want to talk about foreign policy. But at this point, people are becoming more and more conscious and aware of the fact that the money that is spent on the military for military operations across the world in different continents are hurting them. That part of the reason that their children are having less opportunity than they themselves had, and they didn't have enough, but that their children have less opportunity for earning money, for going to college, for having good lives, for living on their own, for raising families, you know, all of those things, that they are connecting the values that both the Democratic and the Republican parties put on military and war, that's not lost on them. So that when they see Biden trying, whatever the words that you may have used, that he tried to do this, he said he would do this, he wanted to do this, and he didn't do it, and the prior Democratic parties, presidential parties, didn't do it either, then the Democratic presidents didn't do it either, then they're like, okay, what shall we do? We've been told that there are only two parties that you can vote for. And so what do they do if they go, well, Democrats didn't do it, Obama didn't do it, you know, Biden didn't do it, my kids are still in debt if they've gone to college or they have fewer hopes of going to college. So
but then
the
argument is he can't do it himself. You know, he's got opposition.
Yeah, well, my favorite answer to that was when Obama got elected. It went from, I watched the progression of what people said. They said, oh, well, he'll never get elected. They'll never let him live. So he got elected. And they said, well, even if he gets elected, he won't by himself be able to do it unless he gets a majority in both houses of Congress. Okay. People gave him that. He got majority in both houses of Congress. And then people were saying, well, you know, having the majority is not enough. You need to have filibuster proof. Guess what? He had filibuster proof. He had, at the very beginning, 60%. This is President Obama in 2008. 60% in both houses of Congress. He brought in something called affordable health care, Obamacare. Again, the progression. So he has 60% in both houses to start out with. He only needs 51 to get this thing passed. We will have a robust public option. Well, okay, so we'll have a public
option. But he doesn't have enough progressive Democrats.
Right. It blames his own party in this case. You know, it's like, well, they're come from these conservative states and all of that stuff. But nevertheless, he had enough to pass it. The Progressive Caucus said they would not pass it without a public option because it went from, oh, some kind of public option to, oh, well, okay, a weak public option, but at least a public option so that the private insurance, hospital, medical, drug companies would have competition, you know, good old American competition. And he dropped that and the Progressive Caucus folded, except for one person who had to be taken up in the presidential jet and sweet-talked by Obama.
Dennis Kucinich.
Yeah. And then he folded, you know, but so that even...
Because they don't want the Republicans to win. They feel like they have no choice.
Yeah, well, so there we are. When somebody had everything possible in order to raise the United States of America up from being the worst healthcare system of all of the wealthy, industrialized, developed countries, the worst, it went from the worst to the worst, but it was better than it was before. So people see that, and then they see that their kids can't go to college. They see that they can't take vacations, you know, and then they go, okay, well, polls showed that it wasn't about when Hillary Clinton lost to Trump, that it was just that they were so discouraged by the 8 years of Obama and the years before that, that they thought, okay, well, let's try this guy. He's an outsider. He's telling it like it is.
Although she did win the popular vote.
Yeah, but she didn't take the presidency.
Right.
And why is that? There's been so much Democratic Party power in this country for so long. Why has that electoral college remained in place, giving the presidency to both Bush in 2000 and Trump in 2016. Why does that still exist? It's on a long list of things that there's no excuse for. And another thing, and this goes back to Obama as well, when he had all that power, people that are very interested in a woman's right to choose what happens with her body and birth and pregnancy, they go to Obama and they say, hey, let's get this, take this out of the hands of the Supreme Court, pass legislation. He said, it's not a priority. And it was also not a priority for Obama, again, to nominate, to put somebody on the Supreme Court. He had a year. But why did he not do that? We all know this, right? It was the Republicans' fault that he didn't do that. Right?
Well, are you talking about when he nominated Merrick Garland and the Republicans?
Yeah, well, when he had a Supreme Court vacancy to fill and he didn't get it done. And people say, well, Mitch McConnell or something wouldn't let him do it. It's like, well, wait, who was the president? And...
Well, Congress does have to approve, right?
But let me ask you, is Obama an eloquent speaker or not?
Sure he is, yeah.
Sure he is. Why didn't he take his case to the American people? Why didn't he talk to people and say,
Did he not say anything at all? I mean,
I don't think that he did not say anything at all, but he didn't say enough. He didn't get it done. He had a year.
So you think he should have put as much energy into that as he did into campaigning? That would have been very persuasive.
That would have been a good campaign piece.
Yeah.
Look how the Republicans play. This is not something that is fair and square, you know. They are doing dirty tricks, or, you know, whatever. But then people might not have gone, oh, well, we tried him, we'll try him. It's like, no, those guys are even worse. But he didn't make that case at all.
So he didn't take advantage of his position and his ability to articulate issues, you're saying?
Right. And it wasn't like he didn't have those things. He had the bully pulpit. He had people on his side. He has the skills, the talent, the gifts of speaking. Why not speak to the people? So then, you know, then we come up to 2024 and we've had 4 years of Biden. Did the minimum wage come up? No, he was going to do that. Did he get rid of student loans? He nipped at it, you know, sort of a little nip and tuck, but he didn't get that done. I think he blamed the Republicans on that as well. But the big, big picture in the United States, and I think people are starting to get the big picture, as I've mentioned, one of the big pictures is the money that's going toward the military and war and defense and Homeland Security and the FBI and the prisons and the police is taking money out of the opportunities for people's children and themselves, you know, to take vacations, to have an enjoyable, meaningful life. And so the big picture is that there is no excuse, no excuse. And people are taking these excuses less and less. No excuse for the richest country the world has ever known to have the worst healthcare system of all the other wealthy industrialized countries. There's no excuse for other countries to be able to give their young people higher education free. If the young person takes the responsibility and does what they need to do in college, they don't have to pay for it, you know, especially for decades afterward. Other countries manage to do that. Other countries that even aren't on that list of wealthy countries give their people health care, give their people free education. If the young people or the old people, you know, do the work, they get the education. There's no excuse for that. There's no excuse for there being homeless people, for people not having a roof over their heads. Other countries have solved that problem. There is no excuse for the U.S. not to do it. And people are getting tired of the excuses, I think.
Well, there seems to be a real reluctance to learn from other countries in general. The U.S. wants to do it its own way.
And the values. I learned as a very young child that how do you know what somebody's values are? Where do they put their money? What are our values? Military, not health, not education.
So in the Green Party campaign, you would expect that what you just said will be put out there by Cornel West or whoever the candidate is.
Right. Yeah.
And to what extent do you think that message will get out? What sort of access would a Green Party candidate have on a national level? I mean, it seems like Ralph Nader had a good shot because of his name recognition.
Mm-hmm.
But what about now?
Well, now that things have closed down, even Nader would be getting less airtime on the mainstream outlets, you know, whether it's radio, TV, newspaper, on internet, you know, whatever. The attack is one of making you invisible. You know, the tactic is to make you absolutely invisible.
Although the No Labels Party has gotten some publicity because they're kind of more mainstream and they have people like Joel Lieberman there that the media likes to talk to.
Yeah, well, and the Green Party has been around for 30 years, 32 years, actually, and for 32 years, they've been trying to kill us. Because
yeah. And you're on the ballot. You're all across the country, right?
All across the country. We're actually, the Green Party is international, you know, and so it's hard to kill us. And plus, it's hard to kill a political party that has the values of justice and peace and the environment and a real democracy and does not take corporate money, which means we do not take billionaire money, which means that they're not our boss. The two Titanic parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, the huge cruise ships, they have a boss. Who's your boss? The person gives you the money. The person that pays, that signs your paycheck.
I suppose you could say, we'll take your money, but screw you. We won't vote the way you want.
Oh, yeah. When was the last time a Democratic or a Republican party did that?
I don't know. It'd be an interesting research project. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it'd be a pretty fast research project.
Yeah.
I don't think it's happened.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember Hillary Clinton, when she debated Bernie Sanders, saying, I've never taken a bribe. And Sanders says, Hillary, that's not the way it works, you know?
Yeah, right. Oh, that's a good line. There's a system out there.
Yeah.
I mean, when you talk about, you know, I was thinking, you know, in travels, you know, people talk about how countries are corrupt. And well, you know, if you get a ticket, you just pay somebody and then you don't get the ticket, you know, all of our corruption is constitutional. You know, you don't give an individual, you know, there's not that much corruption that you can buy your way out of a ticket. It's not like it doesn't exist, but that's not the main thing. The main thing is that the billionaires and the corporations buy the president, they buy the Congress, you know, and that's perfectly legal, and it's not called corruption. Of course, it's bribery, of course.
Anything else you want to add to what you said?
Well, I so admire Jill Stein.
Campaign manager for Cornel West, right? Okay.
Yeah, well, she was a supporter of Cornel West's run, absolutely. And then when he left, I've talked with her even, but she did some soul searching. The Green Party has to run a presidential candidate in order to survive. There's no question about that. We also run local, but in order to run local, we have to have somebody running for president. That's what helps get the Green Parties on the ballot and the Green Parties organized state by state. It helps keep us in the news. There are four parties in this country that actually get on the ballot enough to be able to conceivably win, you know, mathematically, to be able to conceivably win. And those four parties are the two Titanics, the Democrats and the Republicans, and the Libertarians and the Green Party. They should be in the debates. And the ballot access, I mean, you know that automatically the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are on the ballots on all the states. The other parties have to go through incredibly arduous money-taking and time-taking process to get on the ballots of all the states in order to just even be able to allow people to vote for a party such as the Green Party that has peace, justice, the environment, and real democracy without taking corporate money, in order to be able to vote for a party like that, that's sort of a no-brainer good idea?
That was California Green Party activist Laura Wells speaking with KABU contributor David Rosenberg. You've been listening to KABU News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Thanks for being with us.
KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area and all over the world at KABU.FM.
KABU just finished our All Thrills, No Frills special programming campaign. We want to thank